Yes, we won three of those, but we lost two of them to Donald Trump, which is absolutely positively unforgivable. Like, it just, it cannot happen. Like, it's just, it's so bad.
We've got with us today Amanda Littman, who's one of the co-founders of Run for Something, and she'll tell you all about what Run for Something does. But I got to ask her a question when she gets started, because Amanda, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So I know there's a great bit of hostility toward the boomers.
Mm-hmm.
But my question is, how do you feel about the Xers?
Oh, how do I feel about the Xers? You know, mostly just I'm sad for you all.
I know we're always left out and, you know, caught in between. What's going on with us?
You know, I wrote this whole book about like generational styles and leadership, and the number one thing piece of feedback I've gotten that actually was fixed for the paperback, which is from Gen Xers being like, why didn't you talk about us? Which is the most quintessential Gen X thing to say. Above all else.
I'm glad I started out the way. I'm glad I'm on message.
Ask Gen X to be like, what do you think of us? Do you like us?
Because we're going to lose out. I'm convinced we are going to lose out. We are not going to have a Gen X president. It's going to go from the boomers to millennials, and nobody will ever look back.
And honestly, Gen Xers are actually the single generation that seems to be getting more Republican, which is just, I'm just leaving it.
Yeah, that's true.
Check the lead, check the crime. You know, they just saying.
It's the squeeze.
It's the hose water.
You know what it is?
It's
the squeeze.
Water.
It's like kids on one end, parents on the other end, not enough money in the middle. You know, everybody's like tightening up. Yeah, it's tough.
Rough.
All right, Amanda. So thank you for, I noticed you did not say that you were going to look out for us, but I did notice that.
That's why we're having you on. When you're in charge, we want you to be nice to the Gen X.
Exactly.
So look out for us.
In the planet of the millennials, just we're like the chimpanzees, just look out for us. Welcome to the show. We do want to talk about your fantastic organization, because you guys have got a great alumni network. You've been recruiting candidates all over the country, but I want to hear directly from you about what Run for Something does.
So Run for Something recruits and supports young, diverse leaders running for local office all across the country. We got started back in 2017 on Trump's first inauguration day, along with my co-founder, Ross Morales Rocchetto. And Ross and I wrote a plan, we built a website, and we thought Run for Something was going to be really small. We thought we'd get 100 people in the first year. We had 1,000 people sign up in the first week. As of today, we're up to about 260,000 young people across the country who've raised their hands to look into running for office. We've endorsed more than 4,000. We've helped elect more than 1,654 across 49 states plus DC, mostly women, mostly people of color, all millennials and Gen Z, all first-time candidates when they first ran.
Awesome. Who are the people? I know a couple of people right now. Let me just name them, because they're like the hot prospects that are out there. James Tallarico in Texas. Mm-hmm. I think he was one of your candidates. And also, I'm from Michigan, so Mallory also is one that we pay a lot of attention to, who's running for the Senate up there.
That's right. I would also add in Jasmine Crockett, who was also in that Texas Senate primary, is one of our alum. Wow. We've got a deep enough bench. We've got them both. Zach Walls, who's running for Senate in Iowa. Francesca Hong, who's running for governor in Wisconsin. Alexis Hill, who's running for governor in Nevada. Ethan Corson, who's running for governor in Kansas. Jermaine Johnson, who's running for governor in South Carolina. We've got a couple dozen, I think, at this point, running for U.S. House, Secretary of State candidates in Michigan and Colorado, a state treasurer candidate in Colorado, an AG candidate in Michigan. At this point, we have built over the last decade an incredible bench of talent, and it's just going to keep going.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's really, really great. You know, the other thing that you've done other than Run for Something is you write a ton. You've got a great social media feed. I've been following you for the last couple of months, and I think your thought leadership kind of on where we need to go as a party has been some of the best that I have read. Like, you've actually, like, I've had all these thoughts swimming around in my head, and you really have crystallized a lot of them, and you've like put them into words. And I'm like, oh, that's what I'm thinking. That's what I'm feeling. You know, we have talked a lot on this show about the 2028 primary being a kind of struggle between, you know, centrism, versus progressivism, just to make it kind of very, very simple. And, you know, I think you've written about that actually not being the way, it's not that simple. It's not just this XY axis, and like, it's not that simple. And so I'd love for you to talk about kind of how you see what the struggle that the Democratic Party is facing and how it's going to play out in this primary.
I just think this idea of centrism versus progressivism or center versus left is not how voters experience politics. Most voters do not have cohesive ideologies. They believe in a mix of things pulling from various like components and ideological parties. They believe in contradictory things. What they have are problems they want solved. They don't actually give a shit about like the ideological home of those problems. Where those answers are coming from. What I think right now, the actual axis is for Democratic candidates sort of twofold. One is fighterfold. Like, are you willing to push back, to stand up, to actually do shit, not just write angry worded letters, or are you going to fold? Are you going to back down? And I think that we're going to see that sort of transition in 2028, in particular, to accountability versus like moving forward. And like not looking back. And I think Democratic primary voters are going to want someone who says, no, we're going to hold these motherfuckers accountable. We're going to like not restore the norms, but we're going to go back and make sure that if you committed crimes, you face punishment. That if you killed people, if you were part of the ICE raids, if you, any one of those things, that you face consequences. The second sort of valence I think that we're looking at is artificial versus authentic. And I mean that both in terms of, yes, AI-generated content, but also, is this a candidate or a person who says what they believe and has core values, or are they selling me a load of consultant and poll-tested bullshit? And if you can't have a clearly set, defined set of core values that you can communicate, voters are going to be able to smell that from a mile away.
So I think about this also as... I'm calling it 3D politics, right? It's also it's left, right, but it's also outsiders versus insiders.
Totally.
And wherever you are on the outside, it matters. My grandfather used to say, it's not about what group you belong to, it's about what group you fight for. And I think about somebody like Bernie Sanders, right? Who's clearly not a millennial or even an Xer, but he clearly is somebody who's taking on the establishment, taking on the power structure and trying to make change. And so I wonder, as you are thinking about, as you are thinking about that outsider versus insider nexus, do you use that when you are thinking about candidates that you want to line up with around the country?
Absolutely. I mean, we're looking for people, especially through Run for Something, who maybe never saw themselves as political, who have personal lived experience with the ways that the systems or the status quo or the government has failed them or left them out, and who really want to solve the problems. And I think the thing that makes it really fun is these are folks who refuse to accept that the way things have been done is the way that they have to be done. Like, they are not beholden to tradition. I think that's one of the challenges writ large for Democrats, especially Democratic incumbents in 2026, and really for a whole bunch of folks in 2028, is you cannot be a defender of the status quo. You cannot say we got to go back to like rebuild what came before. No, we got to build new. We got to build different. Yeah. We got to build better. Not build back, build forward. It's so silly and so cheesy. Like, I know it as I say it, it sounds ridiculous, but you have to agree and have to be able to like point to the ways in which the status quo felt broken in ways that people could feel. Mm. If you can't say I'm going to be part of fixing it and making it better, you don't have a credible argument at the moment.
Yeah. And I think we're trying to figure out kind of what those candidates look like and what that authentic candidate looks like. And I'm a little concerned that you've got people sort of my age, Jamal's age, maybe a little bit younger, but who grew up in sort of the kind of Clinton years, right? 92, 96, big wins after being in the wilderness, with, you know, Reagan and George Bush. I mean, we won like two presidential elections in almost 30 years. And what it took to be the Democratic nominee was something completely and totally different than where we are now. Mm-hmm. We've nominated senators, I think, every election since 2000, former senators, every election since 2000, and we've only won three of those. Figuring this out and figuring out where we're going to go with this next candidate is going to be so crucially important.
So this is where Matt and I disagree a little bit, because you say we only won three of those, and I say we won three of those, right? Like, to me, the governor lens is one that was like, what we thought was true from like the 70s to the 90s. And it seems like what's happened since then is like you've got to have kind of a national, some view of like the national landscape. And maybe the governors could do it if you've got a governor who's got a national landscape. But there's something about either being in the Senate or being a national figure that does give people, I think, the ability to get through the primary process, at least on the Democratic side, better.
I agree with that. We've talked about that the senators have the luxury of only running every 6 years, being able to raise a lot of money, and then also being able to sort of pick and choose what issues they want to talk about. And so it's like it's advantageous, I think, for running for president. But I don't necessarily think it's the greatest profile to be the actual nominee or be the president. I will say, yes, we won three of those, but we lost two of them to Donald Trump, which is absolutely positively unforgivable. Like it cannot happen. Like it's just, it's so bad.
I think for 2028. Yeah.
Sorry. This is where this started. It was just me and Jamal arguing. So, you know, we fall back into it too easily.
You know, I think for 2028, it's actually the, like, what office did they hold before is less interesting or even relevant than how are they able to communicate now. Yep. To prove credibly that they can get shit done. And I think, like, candidly, I think United States senators are going to have a tough time making that case because, boy, do people not enjoy the Democratic Senate caucus right now. Mm-hmm. Some LA House members, like, it's rough. Governors, I do think, have more of an argument because they can say, like, look what I've done. But that is actually less important for policy proof points than it is to help cultivate authenticity. Because authenticity is about trust. It's about saying that what I say is what you can believe because it's who I really am. Like, you don't have to agree with me on every issue to trust me, to know me, to like me. And we've seen in basically every polling, even from people I don't particularly agree with, like Third Way had this in their polling. 73% of Democratic primary voters said it was more important to them that they believe in someone, that they knew someone was authentic, than if they agreed with them on every issue.
So yeah, that sounds right.
George Bush was really successful doing this in 2004. You may not agree with me, but you know where I stand.
That's right.
And he really was able to paint Kerry with that flip-flopping brush, which was tough. So Jamal, like, you're about to say that. Okay.
Any elected official who's able to say, look, I ran on fixing the roads and I did it. You can believe me. Like, promise made, promise kept.
Yep.
It's going to be really hard for members of Congress who are running in 28 to be able to do that. That's not to say it's not impossible, but it's just like a harder hill to climb in terms of what it makes possible for their credibility.
So strongly worded letters with a nice response from the Secretary of Transportation are not going to be the thing.
Not going to cut it.
Yeah. So you talk about authenticity, and then one place where I feel like every candidate needs to be careful to preserve their authenticity is this desire that we all know exists, because it has to exist, to be on social media. And there's nothing worse than somebody who, to me, is in social media doing a TikTok meme. And you're like, dude, come on, please make it stop. can you please make it stop? So how do you advise candidates who are thinking about, like, how they engage in social media to do it in a way that's credible?
Well, first, like, know what you want to say. Have some substance. The style is only possible if the substance is there. Like, you can't market a bad message. That being said, think, where are the places that you can show up, like, in a way that feels true to you? So maybe that's text-based social, maybe that's video, maybe that's graphic, whatever it is. You don't have to be everywhere, but you do have to be present in the places that make sense for you and be able to consistently communicate who you are. And I really encourage candidates, like, think not just about what your policy positions are, but what parts of your life outside of your campaign or outside of your political identity you want to show. That doesn't mean all of it. That doesn't mean, like, live streaming or vlogging day to day every minute of your life. But are you a romance reader? Are you a baseball fan? Are you a parent? Like, whatever it is, give some parts of you to your community, because that's who follows you on socials, your community, in a way that they feel like they can know you. I think, like, really good examples of this, like, obviously Mom Donnie is really good because of his consistency of message, but also there were things like, that dude's an Arsenal fan. I don't know shit about soccer, but I know he's an Arsenal fan.
Right.
That dude has, like, a very deep passion for particular types of food across the city. That's part of his personality. AOC, I know what makeup AOC uses. Weird. Why should I know that? But I do, and it makes me like her more, because it's like, oh, I use that kind of makeup too. Or, like, she's knitting, or she has the dog. And those are parts of who she is. And both of them, and I would think this is important to note, have very clear boundaries about how much of themselves they give to the public. And I think that that's something that if you've grown up online, you maybe understand intuitively, and the campaign forces you to put some strategy and some like clarity around that. But when we're working with candidates, we really try to hammer home, like, you got to be yourself. That doesn't mean all of yourself, but it does mean your real self.
I did see somewhere where you said that you asked candidates a couple questions about how they engage social media. What is that?
So and especially I like to do this to older elected officials because I'm such a fucking troll. but like, tell me what, I like to ask them, like, tell me what social media platforms you're on. Like, what side of TikTok are you on? Or what subreddits are you in? Or like, what is your reels? What kind of reels do you see?
Subreddit?
And I'm not saying there's not a right or wrong answer, but boy, when they do not understand the question, like I asked a very prominent older leader to tell me, like, were they on TikTok? No. What did their FYP show them? And they were like, FYP, what's an FYP? And then they called to their comm staffer and were like, hey, got to get me an FYP. I'm like, if you don't understand the question enough to be able to even bullshit me an answer, you will not be able to communicate in this moment. I'm not saying you need to be chronically online, but you need to be enough of a consumer to be a producer. You need to have enough of fluency in the language of the internet such that when your staff comes to you and says, ma'am, we need to make a video, they don't have to explain to you what the format is. Like, you understand the language, the front-facing video, if they direct to camera, what does that mean? How do people do that? Like, if you got to be at least enough of a consumer to be able to participate.
Yep.
Yeah. Amanda, what do you think about the 2028 candidates? I mean, obviously there's no, well, unless Tallarico wins the Senate and then jumps into this race, there won't be any Run for Something alumni in amongst the 30 or 40 people that are trying to run for president. But is there anybody that stands out to you that is kind of getting it or understands the moment or is communicating in a particularly effective way?
I think all of it is just going to be so exhausting. you know, I think for me, I'm really excited to see how the open primary plays out because I feel very uncommitted to any of them and like interested in different components of different conversations. You know, I actually think Pete Buttigieg talking about how parenting has changed his perspective and like that is a really compelling, I mean, as a parent myself, I find that really compelling.
Yeah.
You know, I find the AOC's conversations about wanting to, you know, take on the status quo as always is really compelling to me. There's a lot of them who have stories to tell that are interesting. I am waiting for someone, and I think there's a real opportunity here to speak to the new coalition that could come. Like there is a, in particular, this is my shtick, but I also believe it, like a millennial and Gen Z moment to speak to the way that our aspirations and ambitions have changed, are changing, our relationship to the American dream has changed. Like the idea that we could ever buy a home feels out of reach. The idea that there's a stable job market and a ladder you could climb, LOLOL, if that was true 5 years ago, which it wasn't, it's definitely not true now. Like the way in which you engage with social media, the way you engage with each other, the sense of community, the way COVID upended so much of our lives, the like really complicated way in which our psychological health and our financial health have become intertwined and really change our politics and, you know, rise of betting, the rise of gambling, like a politics of virtue that comes back into that. I think there's like an open lane here for someone to really speak to those things that I haven't seen anyone do yet. So I'm excited for that. But boy, I am just ready to throw my phone into the sea for 2028.
How do you feel about Gavin Newsom? He seems like he's...
Oh, I was going to ask the same exact question. That's exactly like where I was. Because he's been pretty good on social media. He's been on every podcast. I mean, he's been trolling Trump in great ways. But there is just something about him that, you know, they kind of... inauthenticity. Or is it possible to be that perfect? Is that his authentic self? I am a perfect presidential candidate. Like, I look at the part, I talk the part. Like, anyway, yeah.
I not my cup of tea, but I can always change my preferred flavor. I will see how it goes. I'm not impressed by like the trolling is like a short term dopamine hit. It doesn't get you long term relationship building. And actually, I think like the really effective candidates are ones who I feel like I know. The ones who like I can have an almost parasocial relationship with, who voters can feel like they understand their vulnerabilities and they're honest with, and he's not able to cultivate that just yet.
Well, you know, that is the question, I think, for a lot of people who are paying attention to it is, is this style of Newsom's, is this the style that anybody who wants to run for president has to adopt? Or is there something else that it can also read, maybe perhaps more authentic to the individual candidate that they can engage, you know, they can engage people with? Or like you said, is it just short-term dopamine hits? One thing that does pop out is because he's so ever-present, he's got kind of like a lock on the psyche among a bunch of casual viewers of social media. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, Gavin Newsom did something. Let me forward you the Gavin Newsom meme. And so, particularly with older voters, I think, who are paying attention to this, they'll say like, oh, he seems like he gets it, whether or not, you know, young people.
Yeah, I think I don't know if young people buy what he's selling. Mm-hmm. I'll be curious to see. There's also like a real credibility gap around like the state of things in California. He has not tackled the affordability crisis in a very meaningful way, which makes it hard to argue he's the right person to bring it about. And I think that the trolling mechanism, while it's like a very compelling theory of attention, I am not sure it's one that has sustaining power. Because like, people don't, it's like not fun to deal with a troll.
Yeah, unless he can turn it into attention and building relationships, right? Like you build up this big attention base, like you look like you're inevitable, and then you start to build a relationship. I don't know if he can do that, but it'll be interesting to see. So. Yeah.
And so anyway, as you're thinking about
getting close, but yeah, go ahead.
I know we're going to wrap in a second, but as you're thinking about 2026 and then going into 2028. What do you think would be markers for success in 2026 that Democrats could pay attention to? Somebody asked me a really interesting question yesterday. I was on another podcast, and the question was like, in a way, 2022 misled Democrats about 2024, right? Like we thought we saw things happen in 22 because Democrats kept the red wave from happening that we tried to replicate in 24, and they didn't work out as well. Is there something that we should be mindful of in right now that you think will matter? Going forward,
I think taking a look at these Democratic primaries and seeing the hunger that in particular Democratic primary voters have for new voices, for generational change. You know, I think my biggest takeaway from like 2024 is don't run an 80-year-old octogenarian who cannot credibly argue against the system for president.
Solid.
Okay.
Solid advice. Solid advice.
Sure.
And I think that we really will have to look at how people are interacting with AI, how some of this big money plays a role here. Like, I'm not sure that you're going to be able to buy an election in 2026. I hope not. I think that there is going to be some real backlash to crypto and AI and AIPAC and others spending hundreds of millions of dollars in independent expenditure work or kind of super PAC stuff in a way that we have seen over and over again over the last 18 months, it doesn't guarantee a win.
Yeah.
So thinking ahead to 2028, like, do you need enough money to run a credible campaign? Do you need to be the biggest fundraiser? I don't think so. And I think that's going to be a real different dynamic to look at.
Well, the truth is that money never really has been the decider in the big races, the way we think about it. You got to have enough money to compete. But I think this question of authenticity has always been around, some sense of it. It's just now because of the media that we are experiencing. It's like, it's more invasive. Like people are, you know, it's like an MRI versus just having like an X-ray. Right. And so like now we get to know these people in ways that are much more evocative of like who maybe they are off camera. And you can't, in the old days, you used to be able to be somebody off camera and then be somebody else on camera. And obviously, we know those things are.
And I think for anyone who's like, I don't know, I've had an email address since I was 6 years old. I've been on Facebook since I was in high school. Like, there are pictures. It's just like, I've always been on the internet. I've been thinking about personal presentation of self on the internet since I had to like decide what my AIM profile was going to be to impress my crush in middle school. Like, it's just second nature in a way that I think younger leaders, and that doesn't actually mean like millennials, but younger leaders generally just have had more years to put in the reps on that.
All right.
Yep.
All right. Well, Amanda, thank you for joining us. It's a good edifying conversation. I think a lot of stuff for people to think about going forward, and definitely for those of us with gray hair or no hair, paying attention to what you guys are doing is really important, because frankly, if we can't fix some of this stuff for the kids that are coming after us, then, you know, we deserve to be, you know, put in a home and set on a porch and ignored for 3 days out of the week. So thank you.
We're not there yet. We're not there yet, Jamal.
We're not there yet, but we're rounding the corner. All right. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time on Trailblaze. And remember, our email address is blaze@trailblazepod.com. Please send us a note. Let us know anything you're interested in, and we will try to bring that up on a future podcast. See you next time.
Yeah. Go to runforsomething.net and run for something. Like, sign up. Like, do it. Stop complaining. Just go do it.